on Perek Gimel, we're basically trying to understand how Shlomo Melech was asking for wisdom and what he asked for. So Chazal give a parable. They say, they compare Shlomo to the son of a nobleman who grew up in the palace of a great king. The king was very fond of him, and one day asked what gift he would like. The boy knew if he asked for silver or gold or precious jewels, the king would gladly give it to him. If he asked to be made a duke or a general, he would immediately appoint him. Instead, he asked to marry the king's daughter. Because if he marries the king's daughter, then he gets everything else. Okay, so that's what he asked for. He said, I don't want your gold, I don't want your silver, I don't want to be a duke, I don't want to be a general. Just give me your daughter's hand, and that way everything else will come with it. Now, to answer the question, you got to understand the parable. In what way would marrying the king's daughter give him access to all the other precious gifts? It gave him no power. Even the son-in-law of the king could not take anything he wanted. If power were the key to the king's wealth, he would have been better off asking for the command of the army, if that's what he really wanted. Then he would have been able to take anything, and no one could have stopped him. But power has limits, right? Those attempt to overreach those limits lose even what they already have. The king's daughter, however, brought the young man something even greater than power. Through her, he would be able to continue to find favor in the king's eyes. The purpose of Shlomo Melech trying to ask for wisdom was not asking for practical worldly wisdom. That's not what he wanted. He did not want to be a scientist. He didn't want to develop technology. He did not want the cure to cancer. That's not what he was looking for. That'd be nice, but that's not what he was saying. He didn't want to be a cunning politician. He didn't want to be able to outmaneuver his opponents. He only wanted the wisdom to choose between good and evil, which in essence would always make him do good, which means that time goes on, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be happier and happier and happier with him, where every year he's only doing good, where Yom Kippur comes along and he's like, I don't know, I'm doing pretty well. And every year HaKadosh Baruch Hu is more happy, which means he'll memela get more gifts. If he's the son-in-law of the king and he's hanging out with the king all the time, that means that the king is constantly going to be asking him what he wants, what he's doing, is there anything else I can do for you? He'll get more and more and more things. That's the concept of what he's trying to get over here, and he wants to get more and more, but that's the way to be able to do so properly. And that's the idea behind it. Okay, so what else do you have over here? Shlomo Melech knew that the wisdom that he wanted was beyond any man's natural abilities. You cannot always judge correctly and fairly in all situations. There's no way to be able to do it because our rationale and everything that our minds go with is it's by definition limited. What he really wanted was Siyata Dishmai. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help me see the right decision and decide it before I even know what I'm thinking. That, I don't know, two people come in front of me and each guy is having a claim. I should look at one person, the person who's right should just light himself up. He should just be lit up with truth. Let that happen. And that way, I don't have to worry about trying to figure it out on my own or anything like that. He wanted the Siyata Dishmaya that's there. As a side note, Shlomo Melech also was able to understand the language of the birds and the animals, which is awesome for many, many reasons. He was able to understand everything. And there's no wisdom that has ever been like that whatsoever. He goes through and he says that the only person that's ever been or ever will be like Shlomo Melech is Mashiach. Mashiach is greater than Shlomo Melech, that not only has this, but he has more.
Which one?
The Mashiach. Mashiach and David. But there's no other person that's going to be like this ever, and stuff like that. What else do we have? Ah, that's right. It was like the wisdom of angels. It was greater than any Navi, because any Navi, it's not always clear and it's not always complete. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, who was clear and complete about everything he wanted, nonetheless, Shlomo was greater than him when it came to wisdom. Because Moshe Rabbeinu only got what he had in Nevuah when he was supposed to get it. For example, remember Eldad and Medad? Eldad and Medad, he didn't know what Eldad and Medad were saying. There were certain limitations to his Nevuah. Shlomo Melech understood everything that was going to be. He understood the plan. He got the plan of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. What's up?
So technically, he had no need really for the Urim and Thummim.
To be honest, probably not. I mean, he probably could have figured out everything on his own. And he never had to go to war, so he never really found a need for the Urim and Thummim. The only thing that he ever had a problem with was the Shamir worm. And there's a kasha if this happened before he asked for the Shamir worm or after he asked for the Shamir worm. That's a bit of a kasha.
Many years in Rosh building the Beis HaMikdash?
Yeah, he didn't know how to make engravings on the Beis HaMikdash without using metal tools.
And that wasn't in the second Beis HaMikdash?
Second Beis HaMikdash. I'm saying, I mean, sorry. Whether they had the Shamir.
Right, but it was done at first, right?
By the Mishkan. It is the first.
Right, I'm saying
so. By the Mishkan.
Right, but wasn't by the first Beis HaMikdash?
It was. The Shlomo HaMelech had to find it. So that was part of it. That's the only thing that he didn't know, and he asked for it, and he had to find it through
Hashem. That's the categories of what he asked for wisdom for.
No, and then that's part of the kasha. The question is he supposed to, with the Siyata Deshmaya, should he have figured it out on his own? If you know everything, then you probably know how the Mishkan was made. You probably would have known the Shamir. But you're right, that's not necessarily there. No promises were given to Shlomo HaMelech. He was not promised long life, and in the end, he didn't really get long life. He lived to 52, right? And he didn't get children. He wasn't promised children. He wasn't promised children they're going to be tzaddikim. He wasn't promised a lot of children. No, it's funny. We know about 1,000 wives of Shlomo HaMelech. We don't know about 3,000 kids. That we don't know. It doesn't say how many children Shlomo HaMelech had.
I thought we said that he didn't actually have 1,000.
It's probably not 1,000, but I'm saying, like everybody says, he had 1,000 wives. But it's not, the reason why they say 1,000 wives, by the way, is a pasuk in Mishlei where he says, Echad be'elaf lo matzasi, one wife out of 1,000 I could not find out of all the women that I had. So it sounds like he had 1,000 wives. But it's lot dafka. Let's see, he had 300 wives. We don't know anything about 900 kids. That we don't know. We don't know the amount of kids that Shlomo Melech actually had. Pasuk talks about, Vayikat Shlomo v'nei chalom. Shlomo woke up, behold, it was a dream. He stood in front of the Aron of Hashem, Vayal Olos, and he brought up Olos. Vayash Shlomo, and he brought Shlomo. That's a long Abarbanel. Vayash Shlomo, and he brought Shlomo. Vayash Mishnah Lekolavadav, and he made a Mishnah, made a feast for all of his servants, by the way. And right here is where we learn the concept of a Siyum. That when you finish something, when you get something special, whatever it is, you gotta make a Siyum. You gotta make a feast for everybody else to be able to be involved, to party with everybody else.
What did he really? He asked for something and he got something.
He didn't ask for it. It was given to him in a dream. In the dream, he asked for whatever he asked for. But he was given everything in a dream. It's only like once you gain a certain amount of knowledge and you finished something and you fulfilled something or whatever it's called, then you make a Siyum. Over here, he fulfilled all the knowledge of everything. Not only that, he told others about the dream. He told everyone, I am the smartest man alive. I don't know if he said it in that exact lesson, but he's going around telling everybody, like, I got everything right now. And it was awesome. He woke up in the morning, heard the donkey bray, and he's like, oh my gosh, it's saying I want food. Heard the bird chirping, and he's like, oh my gosh, it's saying I want food. I can't imagine what animals are saying otherwise. But he heard everything, and he heard the animals talking, and he understood what everything was saying. He realized that. But siyumim, all siyumim are learned from this thing right over here.
I don't know, I kind of feel like that goes against every always what I was taught in school was, it's about the effort you put in, not about the amount of knowledge you have. So it kind of goes with no effort for the amount of knowledge.
Shlomo Melech obviously has to put an effort in order to gain this from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You don't get this in dreams.
Okay, fine, but I feel like he kind of skipped a bunch of steps along.
Skipped a bunch of steps if you ask for the right thing. Again, you have to be able to be Zocha to get to the step. He asked for the right thing. Most of us would have made the wrong decision. Most of us, before 5 minutes ago, if somebody would have asked me, what do you want, and choose wisdom, you probably would have joked, yeah, make me the smartest man alive. That's not what Shlomo Melech asked for. He didn't ask to be the smartest man alive. He asked for the ability to choose between right and wrong. That was brilliant. So that means he didn't skip steps. He went in the right direction.
Is there an issue having too much daiva if he's going around telling everybody?
Well, we're going to have to talk about that. How could he mess up when it comes to edicts of the Torah, like having too many horses, too many women, too many whatever, if he had pure Siyata Deshmaya, he's the smartest man alive? We're going to have to talk about that. Let's discuss it as we go on.
Who's the other that asked to know what animals are saying, and then
this is the story. The Baal Shem Tov. Some random guy. Baal Shem Tov. I don't know if that's. Yeah. Anyway, Haz Tavona Shtayim Nashim Zonas Olamelech Vatamod Lefanov. Then two women who were Zonas came to the king and they stood in front of him. Now, obviously, you're going to have all the different innkeepers or whatever they are, right? Whatever it is. But it seems that they're pure Zonas that came in front of the king. Vatomra Yisha Achaz Biaduni. Right? The first woman said, please, my master, Aniba Yisha Zos Yoshvos Bebayis Echod. Right, we were both sitting in the same house, and I gave birth with her in the house itself. On the third day of the liturgy after we had given birth, she had given birth as well. We were together. There was nobody else with us in the house. It was only us two there. They were Zonas, so, but they had just given birth. So I guess there's a little bit of a break here. But the child of that woman died. In the night when she slept stepped on him. She rolled over on him and killed the baby. She got up in the middle of the night. She took my kid from me. Your maidservant was sleeping. And she let her sleep in her lap. And her dead son, she lied down in my lap. I got up in the morning in order to nurse my child. He was dead. And I looked at him in the morning. That's not my kid. It wasn't my kid. So there's no way that's there. Okay. Some say that they came immediately to Shlomo Melech. They did not go to the lower courts. Because you can't... how would this get up to Shlomo Melech? How did this get in there? But it seems that they were pushy. They had no lack of shame. And there was onus. They were willing to go straight up to Shlomo Melech, and that was that. Right? Others say no. Shlomo Melech obviously would refuse. There's no way it went to Shlomo Melech. It went through the lower court systems and eventually brought its way up to Shlomo Melech. Others say, right, that this shows you that Shlomo Melech never thought of any cases too small or too uncouth. He's not going to deal with two zonas who are dealing with a baby dying by the hands of one of them. He's not going to say that. Others say that they were not real women. They were spirits who came in to show everybody the wisdom of Shlomo Melech, and it never really happened. Okay? There's others that say that their husbands had died and left them pregnant, right? And there was a big kasha about having a living child, because if they didn't have a living child, they thought that they weren't going to be bound to doing evil. Now, personally, I don't know what that means, because if you're born with a child, even if the child dies afterward, if the husband is already dead, then there is no evil. So I don't know what that means whatsoever. Maybe it means that the husband isn't dead yet. I don't know. I have absolutely no idea. Others say they were Canaan. They were not Jews. They were Canaan. Yeah.
What was the issue with the Yibam thing?
The question is, if the child was dead and they got into Yibam, but they didn't want to do Yibam, so that was the question. But the problem is, the husband is already dead, and then the child dies, they're not chayv in Yibam. They just had a child. So just because their child died later on, that doesn't mean anything. They're not chayv in Yibam at that point. So either way, I don't know what that meant exactly. Maybe it meant that the husband died after the child. So I don't know. But that's that. At the end of the day, who was the real mother? Was it the first woman or the second woman? We only know them as first woman or second woman. The second woman, so the first woman made up the whole story. That's what you're saying right now. First woman made up the whole story. First woman killed her kid by sleeping on her and claimed that the other woman switched babies. That's a crazy claim.
I actually meant the other one.
So you meant the second woman.
Yeah.
Second woman is going to... Okay, so let's try to see which one it's going to be over here. Matomra Ishakar is low. Ki b'ni achai hu b'nei chamez. The other woman said, no way, dude. My son is the living son. Your son is the dead one. Okay? And the first one said, I'm going with second and first. And the first one said, lo, keep an echa meisu b'ni achoi. No, your son is the dead one, and my son is the live one. But to Daverna Lufnei Melech, as they spoke, they argued in front of the king itself. By the way, as a side note, we say in a song on Friday night, Zama Nafshi Lelo Kin. Okay?
Here, I'll show it to you. It's right inside.
It's very funny, because you see clearly. Do you guys see the difference in what they said? The second woman said, "Lo ki b'ni achai u'b'nei chameis." My son is alive, your son is dead. The first woman said, "Lo ki b'nei chameis u'b'nei achoi." Right? That's what it says over there. Now look what it says. Okay? It's mamash like unbelievable. It's clearly switched. Samanafshi. Re'eli Gveres MS, we say in Samanashi, see the Gveres, the woman who spoke truth. Shivcha Noames, the maidservant who said out loud, Lo ki b'nei chameis u'b'nei achoi. That one was the one who was telling the truth. Lo ki b'nei chameis u'b'nei achoi. Who said Lo ki b'nei chameis u'b'nei achoi? The first one. That's the first one. Okay? I'm just pointing that out. How he knew that, the author of Samanashi, I don't know. But how do you know that it was the first one? I mean, I guess that goes with what we were trying to say. Lo ki b'nei chameis u'b'nei achoi. That was the one that Shivcha Noam said. Right, she was right. The Gveres Emes. It's unbelievable, isn't it? How do you? Where do you get that from? Okay, regardless, they went in front. Anyway, it was a lie. The reason why the second woman would be first, the Meiri says, the reason why the second woman would be telling the truth is because Lo ki b'nei achai. My son is alive and your son is dead. Meaning her ikker is that my son is alive. The first woman said, no, your son is dead. So clearly she's thinking about the dead child more than she's thinking about the live child. But that goes against Samanafshi. That goes against Samanafshi. It also assumes that the first woman is making up the whole story, which again, that's weird. You would make up such a story like that. Regardless, Pasuk of Gimel. The king repeated what they said. Pasuk of Gimel. Okay, this one says, this is my third cetera, and this one says the other way. Now, we have a halacha, by the way. When a king has to decide a case, a judge has to decide a case, you have to go over the Titans in front of the Baal HaDin. You have to say it again in front of them so that they know what I know. I just want to make sure I'm right about this. You're saying this and you're saying that. Is that correct? You have a chiyuv to say that out loud. It says, "Vayomer HaMelech kechuli chor." So the king called out loud, "Bring me a sword." They brought a sword in front of the king. Vayomer HaMelech gizru as a yellow lachai l'shnoyim. Let's split the child, the live child, in half. We'll give half to one, and we'll give half to the other over here. Okay, now, this is the most ridiculous thing you've ever heard before in your life. The fact that anybody could have fallen for this, right? In which the pasuk says, "Batomra isha shabana achai el amelach." The woman whose son was alive said to the king, "King Nechmur Racham el bana." Her racham was going on in her child. "Batomra biaduni, my master, tenu laos the yolud achai. Give her the live child. Vamesal tovizum, just don't kill him."
Is that close to the Yibum thing of why it was a case of Yibum?
Well, no, not anymore, because now you're dealing with a living and dead child. Gamli gamloch lo yegzoru. Gamli, neither I nor you should get it. Cut the child. I mean, what are you saying? What kind of a woman would say that? Give her the live child. Don't kill it, because that's his mother. Oh, shkoyach! What in the world is the wisdom behind that? How in the world does that go? Now, this is unbelievable, okay? There's a lot of stuff that we have to do over here. Now, number one, some say that Shlomo saw it immediately. That as soon as he looked at the two women, he realized immediately who is the live, who is the right woman, who is the wrong one. Whether it's the first or the second, depending on the eerie of the song, right? Whichever one it is, he looked at it and immediately saw what was going to be. The problem was that he can't judge cases based on just divine origin and say, based on my Ruach HaKodesh, I think you're right and I think you're wrong. You're not allowed to do such a thing. So either way, that's that. He also did not want to command that other people are going to cut up the baby. And the reason why is because he was afraid that the servant would take it too far. If he says, "Eddie, you go cut up the child," then the Evan must be like, "With pleasure, sir." Just do it before anybody's able to say anything. Shlomo Melech obviously picked up the sword and slowly picked it up in order to cut the child to give them a chance to be able to save the baby, because he wasn't really going to cut the child in half. That's obvious, right? That's the idea behind it. Boy, that's the craziest thing in and of itself. There is an unbelievable line in the Medrash. From the moment of creation, God prepared the world for Shlomo's judgment. He therefore made the human body symmetrical, so that it could be divided exactly in half. Each woman would receive exactly the same thing as the other. One hand for each, one foot for each, one eye for each, one ear. Had it not been so, Shlomo would never have been able to pretend to apply the principle of equal division, which means that a Gunner's Baruch who created human beings, no, the form that we're in right now, all because of Shlomo Mel's judgment of these two women. Unbelievable, right? Absolutely unbelievable. Okay, here's the cash over here. Did Shlomo Mel really think that one of the women was going to get up and say, "Kill the baby"? Was that really going to happen? What was he waiting for? Now, he said like this, and this is brilliant. How did the baby die? The woman rolled over on her, over on the baby, while she was sleeping. What mother ever has done that? How many babies sleep in the same bed as their mother? The mother never crushes the child.
She was nursing
and she fell asleep. That happens millions of times.
Right.
Billions of times.
What?
Where you're feeding the baby, you fall asleep while you're feeding the baby. You don't crush the baby while you're feeding her.
I've really
You've heard of it. Once in how many cases?
I don't know. I've heard that.
This is Maisim Bechol Yom that this happens. How often does it happen? Someone else understood. The lady who had rolled over on her baby, crushed the baby, was an evil lady. This lady is an evil person. She's going to mess up. There's no way this could have happened normally, naturally. There's something that this woman has within her that's just a little bit off. So he knew that her cruelty would come out when there's a cruel edict of the king. When the king makes such a cruel edict, he knew that something else, a woman, is going to that. And the line that he gives over here, the Miyamloi says, "A woman who lies on her child must be lacking basic human feeling. Such a person will not have mercy on the child of another person altogether." And that's that. That's number one. Number two, there was a baskol that also went out. Okay? That Shlomo Melech said out loud, "Tenu laws of Yolod Achai, Vamesel," I'm sorry, the line is, "Vayomer, Tenu laws of Yolod Achai, Vamesel Sumisuhu." He said that line, "Give her the live child, don't kill the child." The baskol came down from Shlomo at that moment and said, "Hi Imo." That is the mother.
That's a Rashi.
Said out loud. And that's the line that happened. Abascal came out, and that came out. That's one of four times where Abascal came out in order to paskin a case. And what happened? The Jews heard the judgment that the king had done.
And he was in Shlomo.
Because he had done everything up until that point. He had shown everything. He had shown why he had done it and everything like that. They heard this mishpat. They heard everything that he had done. But Yerum Ibn Amelech, and they were afraid of the king. But they realized the wisdom of the king of what he had done. It's not just the fact that he tricked them into doing it. It was the whole maisa, the whole thing. He was able to figure out what it was. He was able to tell them why I did it this way. And he told them what I just told you. And he went up to them and he told them exactly what it was. Some say he went up to the generals beforehand and turned them over to the side and said, like, guys, just know for a second, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do the following, and you're going to see what's going to end up happening. And the generals are like, you'll never believe it. He called it before it even happened. They said that out loud. They were just unbelievably impressed. Unbelievably impressed. Why not? Why not have verification or vindication? I would like to have a Baskel by everything.
Oh,
but that's
like
that.
He already declared it. And then I thought it was that the Baskel declared it.
No, the Baskel did declare it afterwards.
After. Okay, so why? Yeah, no, after he passed it. So the thing that I heard about the Yibum case was that one of them was the mother and one of them was the daughter-in-law. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, there's a famous line with that as well. He doesn't bring that down. It was a mother and a daughter-in-law. It was a question of Yibum on one or the other. But
the daughter-in-law wanted the baby dead because she'd have to wait for the baby to grow.
Otherwise, she's going to have to wait for the other baby, right, which was around, right? Their mother-in-law to be able to go. That is a good call. That is brought down by Yibum itself. There was another thing as well that this was more of a forewarning. Once they saw this is what Shlomo Melech did in this case, they realized that there was something special about Shlomo Melech and no criminal was going to be able to escape his justice. People were scared out of their minds to do something wrong from Shlomo Melech. Because the Akim called him that he was one of the smartest men of all Bnei Yisrael, and that's referring to Shlomo Melech himself. You should know that there's crazy stuff. There's an unbelievable medrash that's brought down by the Alpha by the Otzer HaMidrashim by a guy by the name of Eisenstein. He brings down in his Otzer HaMidrashim an unbelievable maisa where it's really quoted in a Tosfos on Menachos Daf Lamed Zayin Aleph, where Shlomo Melech had captured Ashmadi, king of the demons, and Ashmadi said to him, do you want me to show you something you've never seen before? So Ashmadi, king of the demons, said, sure, of course. You know, I'm sorry, Shlomo Melech said, yeah, I'd like to see it. So he pulled out from underneath the world, 500 miles down the Malala? No. But he pulled out from underneath the world, 500 miles from underneath the world, he pulled out a guy with two heads, like fully two heads on both sides of his thing. He pulled him from Shlomo Melech and he showed him, not a Siamese twin, a two-headed guy. So Shlomo Melech said to him, he was shocked by him, and he was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. He calls over Bnei Yehu Ben Yoyada, you know, his general. And Yehu Ben Yoyada comes in, and he immediately makes a bracha, bruch atah Hashem, and olam neshana habrios. I don't know why Shlomo Melech didn't make it. Maybe he was used to seeing stuff like this. But he made the neshana habrios. They asked him questions. They said, where do you live? Where do you go? So he said, I live in another land. In our land, the sun rises in the west, and it sets in the east. Real weird thing, right? He said, what do you do for a living? He said, I'm a shepherd of animals, and I take care of animals and stuff like that. He said, do you want to send you back? So he said, do you daven? And he said, yeah, we daven. How wondrous your works, O Lord. Right? They're all made with wisdom. He said, do you want to send you back? He said, yeah, of course I want to send you back. I don't like these one-headed people over here. So he said, Ashmadi, bring him back. Ashmadi said, I can't do it. I can only take. I can't put it back. Like, why did you tell us that beforehand? So the two-headed guy had to live. So Shlomo gave him a little bit of land, and he got married. Okay? He got married. He had seven children. Six of them were one-headed. One of them was two-headed. When he died, he left a lot of money and a lot of property and everything like that. And the seven children came to divide it up. The two-headed kid got up and said, I count as two. He should give me a double portion. So he went in front of Shlomo Melech. Shlomo Melech was like, right? What are you supposed to do in such a case? So he went to the base of Mikdash that night and davened and said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he gave me all the tefillah. What am I supposed to do in this case? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him chokmah. The next morning, this is what he did. He took a towel and put it on top of one of the guy's heads. Then he took boiling hot water and started spritzing it in the other guy's face. And they both screamed. So from that, he understood that the nerve endings were hitting both of their brains at the same time, and he understood that they're both the exact same person. They count as one. And from that, they called out. They said, we're one guy, we have one thing all together. So he counted as one, and everybody was misspoiled from the wisdom of Shlomo Melech. Unbelievable metrics, right? There's a couple, there's three other stories of the wisdom of Shlomo Melech, but they're unbelievable stories that go from one to the other.
Are they all that weird?
What happened to the two-headed guy? Why do we have, like,
What happened?
Oh, he's dead.
He wasn't a very nice guy. Mayim Melech Shlomo Melech Malko Yisrael. Shlomo Melech was the king over all Bnei Yisrael. Obviously, we have there were three steps made over here. Number one, he was chosen by God to succeed his father from the Nevuah of Nathan and Navi to David and Melech. Number two, David and Melech allowed everybody. David and Melech put him in charge and got everybody there, and that was by eliminating all of his enemies and taking care of all of those. Number three, they all saw his wisdom and they realized what it was right over there. Okay, that's that. There's a lot of things that Shlomo Melech got that David and Melech never was able to get. Number one, he ruled over all of Bnei Yisrael from the start, unlike David and Melech. Number two, he had peace the entire time without any problem whatsoever. Number three, there were no rebellions during Shlomo Melech's time at all. Number four, every single person there was happy with his leadership without any problem whatsoever. So those were huge things for Shlomo Melech to be able to be in charge. These were the officers that he had. Adar Yahu ben Sadaka Kohen, Elichoref v'Achio b'nei Shisha Sofren, Yoshafat ben Achilu Ramazkir. Okay, there's a lot of stuff about stuff like this. Now, whether Azariah was the son of Sadok HaKohen or the son of Achimaz, the son of Sadok HaKohen, that we don't know. It seems like he's the grandson of Sadok, but not the actual son of Sadok. It could be that Sadok helped raise him, and that's the reason why he's known as then Sadok, but it probably was not the son of Sadok itself, because he would have been really old by this time, if he was actually his son. Okay, that's number one.
I just say this guy's the son of six scribes.
Six scribes.
Shisha's
the name, dude. Shisha spelled Shin Yud Shin Hei. That's that. So that's that. It's possible that we don't know exactly like who these guys were, what they were trying to be, scribes and whatever it is. Some say that they're referring to chief officers, and they all had their own things. It could be that one guy was in charge of taxes, one guy was in charge of legal decisions and laws, and the other was recording official events and what they were supposed to do. Some of them recorded financial matters, some of them might have recorded history. We don't know exactly what they were doing, but regardless, because of all that. There is a famous a Gemara as well in Sukkah that mentions that it was decreed in heaven that Elichoref and Achio were both going to die. The Malachim of us came to Shlomo Melech and was very, very upset. He said, Shlomo Melech, why are you so sad? He said, I've been commanded to take away two fine men who are sitting right here. He said, the Malachim of us, I have to take away these two men, I have to kill them, and I don't know how to, I was upset. I'm upset because of that. So Shlomo Melech thought, I'm going to outsmart the angel of death. Okay, so I'm going to send him to a place where he can't get them. He called up demons and told the demons to take them to the city of Luz. The city of Luz is a place where there's no death. There's no death in the city of Luz. So he thought he would outsmart them by bringing them to the people, to the city of Luz. So the demons flew with those two servants. They brought them over to Luz, right? That's that. When they got to the gate of Luz, who'd they see there? Malachim Avos. Malachim Avos killed them before they were able to enter the city. The next day, Shlomo Melech saw the Malachim Avos laughing. I told him what happened. And he said, I was told to take their lives outside the city of Luz. I didn't know how they were going to get there in time. But you did it. So Shkoyach, you were the one who helped it. So that's that. So Shlomo was told, you can't cheat death. The one thing that you can't do, no matter how smart you are, is you can never cheat death.
What's that?
That's the lesson from that. Maybe even, well, it's obviously not in Daf Yomi because we haven't gotten to it yet, right? It's probably been above. You know what? 14.
Let's listen to that. Hold on.
We're on chapter 4, 14. Sukkah 53 is Nun Gimel. Yeah, that's right. It's tomorrow.
Yeah. Tomorrow's
Daf?
Tomorrow's Nun Beis.
Tomorrow's Nun Beis. It's 2 Daf. No, I thought it was somewhere out there. Okay. Ben Yodah was the general of the army, as we all know. And then Tzadok of Yosra were the Kohanim. Remember, Avyosar was already banished. Remember, he had already told him to go to Anasos, that he wasn't going to be able to serve. But it could be that Avyosar still served when it was there. Or it could have been another Avyosar. I mean, Avyosar was a common name back then. Sort of like Tzvi. That's that. Azar Yahu ben Nasan, Alanitzavim. Azar Yahu ben Nasan was in charge of all the officers. Zavim ben Nasan, Kohen Re'eh HaMelech. He was the Kohen, as well as a friend of the king. So whatever that means, okay, but that guy, so some say he actually was a Kohen, other means he was just appointed to a high position. Bachishar Alabayis. Bachishar was in charge of everything in the house of Shlomo. Adoni Ram ben Abda Alamas, he was in charge of tax. Okay. Shlomo had 12 princes that were in charge of all Bnei Yisrael, obviously 12 princes for the 12 tribes. Okay, the Kilkulos and Melech, they gave Parnassa to the king and his Beso, Kodesh Bashana, each one a month out of the year. In other words, people were not chayiv in taxes every month of every year. They weren't chayiv in taxes. They were chayiv to pay taxes once a year, and it was enough to be able to support the king for 1 month. That's all they had to pay. There was nothing else that they had to do. Meaning, if there were regional taxes, maybe the regional taxes they'd take care of. But they all had to add on to be able to support the king's food for 1 month out of every year, and those 12 shvatim them all together. The chokhlo is not that he's a hundred bashani. Yell. I'm sorry? 12 shvatim. The alachain. You can think about it. You'll figure it out. Alachal the kalkel. Each one had to provide for 1 month in every single year, and that was going to be that all together. So that's the way it was supposed to be all together. Okay. It seems also that this tax was not necessarily paid in money. It may have been paid in persons. That for 1 month out of the year, everybody in that shevet who was of age had to go and work for the king. Whatever you had to work at, you had to work at. If you had to be wood choppers or water carriers or serving the kings, whatever it is, but that's what it was all together. So it may not have been that they ever gave any money. They just had to work for the king 1 month out of the year.
Economically, not. Like you're uprooting an entire
region.
Yeah, for a month.
Well, what do you think you normally have in times of war? You're right. I mean, that is going to be a problem, but they do have these issues when it comes to war as well.
Like
you're saying because it's temporarily. But you are having this at least makes them work for 11 months out of the year. You have 11 months where you can work. You know you have a holiday for 1 month in which you're working for me, so know that. You're going out. So that's probably what it refers to. Now, here we go. Here are the names over here. Ben Khur Baharafayim, Ben Decker B'malkatz B'Shalvim, of course Shalvim, Obeid Shemesh, and Elon B'Shanan. Ben Chesed Ba'arubos Lo Sokol B'chol Eretz Kefer. Ben Avinadav B'chol Nofas Dor Tofas Bas Shlomo Haislo L'Isha. And he married one of the daughters of Shlomo. It's unlikely this is chronologically in order because Shlomo was 12 to 15 at the time. He probably did not have a daughter of marriageable age at the age of 15. Bana Ben Achivu Tanach O'Megido B'chol Beis Shan, right? Asher Eitzel Tzorsano Mitach Israel under Israel Mibes Shan Ad Avo Machola Ad Me'ever Liyak Ma'om. Ben Geber B'mos Gilad Lo Chavos Yari Ad Chavos Yari B'menashe Asher B'Gilad Lo Chavol Argov Asher B'Vashan Shishim Arim Gidolos Choma. There were 60 cities that were large with walls of Briach Nechoshes and with locks of copper. Achinad Ben Ido Machanaimo Achimaz Ben Absali Gamu Lokach His Vosmas B'Shlomo Le'isha. He took Vosmas the daughter of Shlomo as a wife. Again Bana Ben Chushi B'Asher B'Alos. He took care of Asher and Alos. Yoshav B'Ruach B'Yisachar Shim Ben Elab Ben Yamin Geber Ben Uri B'Eretz Gilad Eretz Sichon Melech Amori V'Og Melech Abashan and Tziv Echad Asher Ba'aretz. And there was one officer that was in charge of all of them all together. That extra officer was probably the guy who was either in charge of all the regional officers or he was in charge in a leap year. Pretty cute, right? He didn't figure out what he'd do with Adar Shani.
Yeah.
Right? But he was in charge of a leap year. That is pretty good. Yeah, that's right. But because that was easier, you could be smaller than the others because it only happens once every 2 or 3 years.
That's right.
Something like that. Yeah, that's the easy one. Another says it was the officer that took care of the needs of those who came to the royal court, right? And others say it was by those nations that were outside the land of Israel. In other words, they got taxes and they got money from nations that were living outside of Eretz Yisrael as well. They were the ones there. That is that. Those that are mentioned by their father's name and not their own name were not as famous or kosher. Those that are named by their own name are famous and kosher. Yehuda Yisrael, Paskov. Yehuda Yisrael, Rav Kachol Asher, Yom Merov. The Yehuda and Yisrael were as many as the sand on the sea. That's how many there were. Olkel Meshosim was making. They ate, they drank, they were married. Now, why are they compared to sand? Number one, you dig a hole in the sand, what happens?
It
all fills back in. And that's the truth with Bnei Israel as well. We always recover. No matter how many times we're killed out, no matter what, we always recover. No matter how many losses we have, the population may temporarily fall, but we're all going to come back. That's number one. Number two, we are not lime. Sand is left out. If sand is left out in any type of building, then things will fall apart. Sand is needed along with everything else. So too, the nations of the world need the Jews or else they fall apart. Also, number three, sand, when it's melted down, becomes glass, beautiful glass, and it becomes something very kosher. So too, Bnei Yisrael, after they go through Yisurin, become very kosher. When we're burned down, so to speak, we become more kosher after the Yisurin than beforehand. It allows us to melt.
You're saying sand is needed with a K or an N?
Needed N.
No,
N-E-E-D-E-D. That needed is that K-N-E-A-D-E-D. No, N-E-E-D-E-D. And the last one is that sand is on the shores of the sea. It stops by the water and the water can't go any further. Meaning, water stands for taiva and the sand are your limitations. Meaning that a person knows his limits. He knows his limits. He's not going to go against something impropriety, and the Torah would allow the Jews, the Torah that they learned, allowed the Jews to, even though they were eating and drinking and being merry and everything, they had their boundaries, and they did not cross those boundaries, they did not do things that were evil. Yes, no?
Isn't usually sand, we're compared to sand when we're not, so like sand
in comparison to stars and all the other things.
Like stars are considered when we're on the high point, sand is like when we're trampled on. And
you are 1,000% correct. I mean, it's at least not the dirt, right? Sand is not dirt.
Compared to dirt ever. I'm saying
by Avram Avinu, by Lech Lecha. When Avram Avinu is told that don't worry, your children will be saved, he's talking about when they're upper, even when they're garbage and disgusting dirt, still going to be there. Now, you're right, we should be known as stars. The point is that sand over here has a connotation that B'nai Yisrael in the years of Shlomo Melech, although they weren't the greatest tzaddikim in the world, nonetheless, they were very important people who needed to be there. They weren't stars, but they definitely weren't dirt.
Okay, so B'nai Yisrael themselves were not necessarily in star level.
Yes, exactly. That's a
report. Well, we had just come away from a civil war, basically.
We're about to get into a civil war.
No, but
what do you mean without Shalom, etc.?
Yeah,
that is correct.
That is correct.
Perek Hey Pasagal, Shlomo Yamosha Bakal Mamosman, and our Eretz Plishim Agvul Mitzrayim. Shlomo is the ruler of all the kingdoms, from the river that's by the land of the Plishim until the borders of Egypt. Magishim Minchava Ovdim Shlomo Koy Mechayev. They brought him gifts, and they served Shlomo all the days of his life. All the lands did. Plishim, Mitzrayim, Edom, etc. They were all there.
Yeah, you have a map in here?
What? No, we're not going to have it, unfortunately. I can give you a map soon. Now, the bread that Shlomo ate in one day, this is the bread, not Shlomo Melech, but you know, for his household. Shloshim kor solos, there were 30 kor of solos. Now, a kor is 400 liters. So if you want to do the 30 times 400, that is altogether 12,000 liters of just fine flour every day. Okay? I don't know how much that is, to be honest with you. I have no idea. Shishim kor kamach, there were 60 kor of less fine flour. Asara Bakar Briam, there were 10 cattle that were very healthy, Estrim Bakar Re'i, and 20 cattle that were not so good, the grazing cattle, you know, not as fat. Umeyatzon, 100 sheep, Levad Me'ayol Tzvivi Achmor, aside from all the Ayol, is not an Ayil. Ayol are deer, Tzvi are gazelle, Yachmor, I don't know, antelope, he says, where the antelope play.
Ayil is ram, are rams?
I'm sorry?
Ayil
is a ram, correct. And it says, Barburim Agusim. And then fattened birds like geese and stuff like that. Now some say that all this dough over here was not even for bread. This dough was just for the appetizers. Pretty good, right? That's how much the dough was, and all this stuff was over there. That's the appetizers. Some say that each one of Shlomo Melech's wives made a meal this big because they all had an entourage. Everybody had their own entourage that was that big. The Barburim, some say are geese, some say are kapans. Do you have any idea what a kapan is? C-A-P-O-N? I didn't look it up. I was going to type a duck or something. All right, anyway, or it could refer to any bird specially fattened by continual feeding, or force-fed animals, or it's just animals that are really big, stuff like that. That's what refers to Barburim. Kirod v'chalevar anam. He ruled over all the different parts of the river. Mitifsach v'ad Aza, from Tifsach until Aza, v'chom al-chalevar anar, all the kingdoms on the other side of the river. Shalom ha'yilom mikolam v'adam yisaviv. He had peace on all sides from everywhere around him, and that's that. Now, Chazal say Tifsach and Aza are either at opposite ends of the world from one another, or they're right next to one another. It's one of the two. That's the Gemara Megillah that mentions this, right? If they're right next to each other, it's just like he ruled over the two cities that were right there, so too he ruled over the whole world, meaning he ruled over everything as if it was right in his backyard. He took care of every place. Others say Tifsach and Aza are opposite ends of the world from one another, meaning he ruled on everything in between. Some say that it's the exact same thing. Yeah, very similar, and that's why it's brought up in the Gemara Megillah. Others say that it's not a machlokas. It depends on how you look at it. Either you look at Tifsach and Aza this way, or you look at Tifsach and Aza that way. You know what I'm saying? Going around the world the other way. Shlomo Melech did rule over the entire known world, which means even the Americas. How he ended up getting to America and what ended up happening, they say that that might be the land of Ophira, although Ophira definitely seems to be South Africa, but it's possible that he did have something. There's a Gemara that says in Megillah, says that Shlomo Melech of the Kippah, three people ruled over the Kippah, which means Kippah is half the world. Well, Shlomo was Melech Alal Yonin, Melech Tachtonin, the bottom of the world itself. Now, although Rashi says that refers to the Shadim, which are the Shadim and the Malachim, which are the Elyonim, and then the people, which are the Tachtonim, there's another way of looking at it that he literally ruled over everything. But everybody says toward the end of his life, he sinned.
The Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere?
I'm sorry?
The Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere?
Yeah, no, because the Northern Southern Hemisphere would have been right there. That was part of the whole world. No, the known world and then the other part of the world.
Like the demon world, you're saying?
No, the way Rashi understands it it as the demonic and the angelic world, as well as the human world. But the way the Chassam Sofer understands it, it's the known world and the unknown world, which was America. He ruled over that as well. 252 Medina. So Ahasuerus ruled over 127, and Shlomo Melech ruled over 252, which included America. Yeah.
Just coming back a little bit, what was the point of telling us is one day provisions?
Sorry, how awesome it was. This is all the
awesome.
The
supposed to ask about Alexander and Napoleon?
No, neither one.
I'll just for him.
I don't remember if he asked about Alexander. The four people that are mentioned is the Sinek, Shasrat, if I remember correctly. Shlomo, no, there's a Chup in there somewhere. Kores, Nebuchadnezzar. And I forgot who the other person was.
What about Sancheres? Sancheres
never got Yerushalayim. Never got Yerushalayim. But you know what? Maybe it did bring up, because I remember a Samach over there. I don't remember. But Shlomo is the one that we're concentrating on over here. That's the one that was referred to over here. Said that, but everybody agrees that at the end of his life he sinned. Something happened. That was when Ashma, the king of the demons, threw him away. That's in the Gemara in Gittin, Ayin Ches, I believe, Ayin Zainim of Iz, somewhere around there. And it mentions that he was thrown away from the kingdom and he had to bring himself back. There's Akasha if he ever came back to his original, you know, to his original greatness. At some point he ruled over the entire world. Did he rule over the entire world when he was at the end of his life? We don't know. Yehuda and Bnei Yisrael all were sitting in securely, right? Each man by their grapevine and by their fig tree, from Dun all the way to Beersheba. Dun was all the way up on top. Remember, that's when Dun switched their position. They used to be in the bottom left hand corner of the map. They moved all the way up. That's when they took Pesel Micha all the way down to Beersheba. All the days of Shlomo was like that. There were no threats, and not only that, there was no crime throughout all of Klal Yisrael, because remember, they were all secure. They didn't think they'd be able to get away with anything. So it was a big deterrent. Yeah.
I have a question. How did he take over all these places if he didn't do war?
There are other ways of doing it. This is what Mashiach is going to do. I have the same kasha about Mashiach. Eventually, we'll see how it can be done.
So
he did it through
peaceful
measures.
12, 15.
Yeah.
It says Vayesh of Yehuda Yisrael. It's the second time it mentions Yehuda and Yisrael, not.
Yeah, you're right.
Separates them. It's like foreshadowing.
It's not only the second time. I mean, we're mentioning it quite a bit. But I hear what you're saying. Like, we're getting ready for a Rechavah. Actually, that's a great call, David, because the word Vayesh, says the Gemara, always indicates that although now it's the Shalva, soon there's going to be problems. Remember, Vayeshev Yaakov, and Rashi says, Bikesh Yaakov Leshev B'Shalva. Yaakov wanted to sit tranquilly, and then Kapatz Rogzo Shal Yosef and Rogzino Shal Dina, and everything happened like all of a sudden. That's that. And they learn over here the Vayeshev is also referring to the Tzaras of what's going to be after Shlomo Melech was king. That soon the kingdom was going to be split. What a great remnant that it says Yehuda of Yisrael. That's a good remnant. That's a very nice remnant over there. Okay, Vayeshev Shlomo Arba'im Elam Urvus Susim Limer Kavu Shemesh Elam Roshim. Yeah, that's what the Gemara says. Vayihu Shlomo Arba'im Elef Arvu Susim. So Shlomo Melech had 40,000 stables of horses, Limer Kavu for his chariots, Ushnemasar Elef Parashim, and 12,000 horsemen. Now, he felt, Shlomo Melech's wisdom was, is that although this was an exorbitant amount of horses, according to one parish, he had 160 million horses.
And I know.
Okay, that's a lot of horses. There, I would put it at that number. I don't know if there are 160 million horses alive today. I don't know if there are that many. Others say he had 40,000 horses. That's a bit of a difference. You know, quite a bit of a difference altogether. But either way, there's no question this is awesome. The halacha is you're not allowed to have too many horses because you might go back to Mitzrayim. Shlomo said, I'm not going to go back to Mitzrayim, so I won't have to worry about anything. He did a long time ago about Paro. But you're not allowed to go back to Mitzrayim in order to get more horses. That's the law, right? So he said the reason doesn't apply. I'm not going to go back to Mitzrayim. But he messed up anyway. The other funny thing is he had 40,000 horses. Even if he only had 40,000 horses, he only had 12,000 horsemen. So, I mean, that's like 2.5 horses per guy. Like, the guy's like riding like 2.5 horses at once. It's crazy stuff altogether. So in the end, it's clear that he gave in. He ended up going down there, and it's clear that from even his own personal chariot he bought from Egypt, he obviously had done something wrong with all this whatsoever. So now, what happened over here? Shlomo is the wisest man alive. How could he have been such a fool to be able to let that happen? The answer is that his idea was, you want to start, I mean, it's the American, it's Ronald Reagan versus Gorbachev in Russia. It's, you want to win? Up the ante. Keep going up and up and up and up, right? Until the guy can't afford to keep going up with you. Ronald Reagan's concept was, keep spending on army, on military stuff, over and over and over again. Make Russia do it together with you until the point comes where Russia just breaks down completely. Because we can't do it anymore and they just lose the war. war. So that's what Shlomo Melech was doing. Shlomo Melech was challenging everybody else, not by going to war, by saying, I have this many horses. Then when other people got horses, he said, well, I'm getting more horses. And he kept buying more and more and more, and so he bought out the whole area, and no one else had any comparison to the amount of horses that he had. So it was a deterrent in which, from now on, he had such a mighty standing army, no one dared to attack. You couldn't attack him. He had way too many horses. He didn't need them. Nobody knew he only had 12,000 cavalry men. That nobody knew. But he did in order to go there. And this was Shlomo Melech's thought process. He said, listen, if I go ahead and I make so many horses, if I get so many horses for my cavalry, although I don't need them whatsoever, and although the Torah says not to, but this is the way to be able to make the peace. That's what he thought to himself. And the way he understood it is he said that this is going to be what's right over what's wrong. Now I can understand what I'm going to do.
Well, that's how you get control of this place. If you have the biggest gun, so to speak. So like,
right. Yeah, that's what we're saying. Yeah, that's one way they could have done it. But yeah, I mean, there's no question that, listen, horses stand for human strength. And I mentioned this before, and I'm going to say it again. There is no war that we ever fought in which it says we have horses. It does not say it anywhere that we brought horses with us to war. It doesn't say we don't have horses. We do have horses. But it never mentions a war that we won while we're riding horses. It doesn't mention that. It doesn't mean that we didn't have horses, but the point was we didn't rely on our horses or our chariots or anything like that. We relied on our Kodesh Baruch Hu, because that's the way we have to go. Because such a large cavalry makes you think that you're the guy in charge, you're going to be the one to be there. And that's why it gets very scary. When you have an Israel that says, our army is the most powerful in the region. You don't want that. You want to say, our God is the most powerful in the region. That's what you want. And we have an ability to, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the ability to do it in a natural means by our army. But if you're saying our army is the most powerful, you're relying on your army. If you rely on the army, then it's scary. That's when it gets scary. And that's when you have to start worrying about those things. And that's the point of what we're trying to learn from over here. The Chilku and Yitzhak Me'ilas and Melech Shlomo, those princes mentioned in the previous chapter, they supported the King Shlomo, his Kola Karev, and all of the army as well, right? Ela Shokan and Melech Shlomo, everybody who was around the table of Shlomo Melech, Ishkan, show each man for his month. Lo ya'adu davor. They did not omit anything, which is also a miracle. Nobody ran out of money. Nobody ran out of time. Everybody was done. Whatever it was there. I'll say that Shlomo Melech's table was never missing anything. I mean, if you wanted a grape, you had grapes all year long. You wanted strawberries, you had strawberries all year long. There was nothing out of season that you were able to have. You were always able to have whatever fruit you wanted at any time. What do you say?
Without the buzz.
Without the buzz, hopefully. I know, unfortunately, we don't live in those types of times anymore. But all right, you say that in Europe 70 years ago? Did you? No way. Rav Yaakov Yosef Herman and All for the Boss, anybody remembers? He used to fast every day. So every day, up until nightfall. So it was a whole long thing. So Rav Yaakov Yosef Herman, when he needed to eat in order to keep up his vitamins, whatever it was, he needed a pear every day. One pear every single day. And one winter, there were no pears available, and his wife, there's a whole story about his wife was so willing, she walked an hour and a half in order to get to a pair so that her husband would have a pair. He never knew that his wife walked that long, but that's that. Here we go. So let's go. Vasa orim v'atevin lasusim. So the barley and the hay for all the horses. Well, rochesh, and for all the whatever the rochesh are. We don't know what the horse is. Either rochesh is a very swift horse, or it's a type of mule, or it's young horses, or it's like some type of other species of really fast animal. I don't know what that would be exactly. I don't know, like a flying camel or something, right? Either way, yaviu alamakom asher yasham ish kamish pato. They brought to whatever place he would be, each one according to what he said, what was assigned to him. In other words, he didn't have to ascend anything. Everything was done. He had all the food that he needed for all his animals without any problem whatsoever. And everybody, whatever he needed, he got wherever he wanted it. God gave Shlomo this test. Yeah, God gave Shlomo wisdom and understanding very, very much. His broadness of heart, his understanding was greater than the sand that is on the shore of the sea. Does everybody notice that for a second? That we just compare Bnei Yisrael to the sand of the sea. And once again, we're comparing Shlomo Melech to the sand of the sea. it's clear that his wisdom was equal to all of Bnei Yisrael's, and that's the idea. Not only that, but just like everything of sand, if you pick it up in your hand, you can tell there's different dots. It doesn't look like a big mush. It looks like a ton of different dots. Shlomo Melech was able to distinguish between many things at once, and he was able to think of billions of things at once. Now you can barely think of two things at one time. I can barely chew gum and walk at the same time. I mean, you know, all this stuff like that is happening. Shlomo Melech was able to think of everything all at once. That's the event. You never heard that before? Can you chew gum and walk at the same time?
Can't do that.
It's like a little sign. It's like this little sign. You've seen this sign. You've never heard that phrase before?
No.
I've heard that.
Okay, good. Glad somebody's heard of it over here. Either way, some say that Shlomo Melech reached the limits of human knowledge. He was able to look out and see things that normal minds were not able to ascertain. He said certain things were beyond his level. And he understood that they were beyond his level. That the Paraduma, he was able to say, Marti Akakma, Rakoka Mimeni, and it's too far from him.
So he got the Mishpatim, but he couldn't get the Chokim?
There were certain ones. The only one that he didn't get was Paraduma. That's mentioned by the Gemara. Yeah, it seems like he got every single other thing. Every single other one was right over there. And he understood everything behind it and all of them. And here's the line. We're going to see it in a second. Material Chokma Shlomo Chokma's Kobane Kedem. The wisdom of Shlomo was greater than the wisdom of all the peoples of the East. Now, the people of the East were the people who understood from Avram Avinu. Remember, the people of the East were the people that Avram Avinu sent out to the East with the Matanos. Those were the special gifts. His wisdom superseded all the wisdom of Avram Avinu that he sent out to the East, Mikol Chokmas Mitzrayim, as well as the wind of Mitzrayim. The point is, they were able to outsmart them all. When Shlomo Melech asked for skilled craftsmen in order to build the base of Mikdash, Paro didn't want to give him anything. So he sent them guys that were going to die that year. Shlomo Melech, through his magic, he was able to figure out who was going to die that year, and he sent it over to Shlomo. Shlomo was able to look at them, realize they were all going to die that year, sent them back in burial shrouds, and said, why did you send me these people to bury them? Sent it back to them. So, yeah, got them all back. I know that's what Shlomo was able to do over here, right? He's also able to learn from every nation. He's able to understand other things out there, okay? And that's stuff like that, okay? Now, Yechka Mikol Adam, he was wiser than all men. Me'isem Azrachi, Me'eman, Me'chalkol, Me'darda, Me'emachol, Me'ishma B'chol Agoyim Saviv, right? He was smarter than all those people over there, and his name, his fame went out throughout everybody else. Now, first of all, Esan, Haman, Kalkol, and Darda are four sons, right? All these guys over here, right, are four sons, and Machol as well. They're five sons of Zerach, the son of Yehuda. They're mentioned in Divrei Hayamim. So they are people. They are actual people. They're grandsons of Yehuda who are really, really brilliant. Some say they were Machol because they knew how to compose music that they danced to, that they were musicians, and they were brilliant because of that. Some say they were all experts in different fields. Esan was an astronomer. Haman was learning in Torah. Kalkol in politics and government, and Dara in science. Shlomo Melech was greater than each one in their own field. And that's what he's able to do. Others say that Mikol Adam is referring that he's smarter than Adam. Esan Azrachi is referring to Avram Avinu. Haman is referring to Moshe Rabbeinu, who was very trustworthy. Kalkol is Yosef, who provided for everybody. Darda is referring to Dor Dea, the generation that went left Mitzrayim. And Machol are even the entire Jewish people because God forgave them for the sin of the golden calf, and that's what it refers to.
What's the Kiddush saying Darda?
It's from Bishan Gemara. I'm sorry?
What's the Kiddush saying Darda?
Dordea versus Milachol.
I'm saying, like, all these other people, it's like saying a bunch of people that...
You're dealing with the first people that died in the Midbar, and then the Dordea that entered Eretz Yisrael. That would be the difference.
Yeah, but why would we assume that they're, like, it kind of seems to mention them whole...
They were brilliant.
Implying that, but, like, you would think that Moshe and...
Oh, yeah. We're going from top to bottom.
We're going top to bottom.
Yeah. Adam, Avram.
Would we go from top to bottom?
Adam, Avram, Moshe, Yosef.
I feel like it's anticlimactic.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, but now they're just... It's not about the climax. Nothing good days. Like Davar Shulzal, the Moshav Yishiro Chamishav Elas. He had 3,000 Mishalim, 3,000 parables, and 1,005 songs altogether. Some say that it means he had 3,000 parables for every pasuk in the Torah to explain that pasuk, and 1,005 reasons for every din drabbanan. Every drabbanan out there, he could explain it in 1,005 ways. Wow. Remember that Shlomo Melech was in charge. He made Erevin, Hilchos Erevin, not the Torah ones, but Drabbanans, and he also made Netilas Yadayim. Hilchos Netilas Yadayim. Those were his inscriptions. He was the one that made those two over there. It doesn't say over here, but it's supposed to be that way. He was. He was. What else do we have over here? So what happened to all these other Mishalim and everything like that? We lost them. Simply put, we only have three of the songs of Shlomo Melech, and that is Shir Hashirim, Kohelet, and Mishlei, and that's all we got. Some say that in Shir Hashirim, Kohelet, and Mishlei are hinted to all the other ones. Every other Sefer is hinted to in those three as well.
I think my understanding was that not necessarily that we lost them, that they were kind of like not put into the synopsis. Like,
it seems they're lost though. We don't have them.
Okay, but also, we do have...
They're lost completely. We don't have anything. Yeah, we have a bunch of others from them. They're not in the apocryphy. But these were totally lost. Like, Yabra Leitzim, the 24. Yeah.
Wait, what are the names of the swarm that were, like, kind of written to the times of, like, Tanakh, but now they're, like, kind of, like, chilling out?
Swarm Hitzonian is what they usually call them. Like, Ben Sira, etc. Yabra Leitzim, in the Erez, the Shrivel of Anon, Vada Ezo, Asher Yotzeb Akir. He spoke of the trees. Some say he spoke to the trees, right, from the cedar woods that are in Lebanon, right? Until the hyssop that comes out from the walls, right? He was able to speak to the animals and the birds, all the remnants, all dog, and all the creeping things, and as well as the fish. He was a Dr. Doolittle for trees. I mean, it's pretty awesome. He was able to understand why everything happened in the world, why all animals were made the way they were. He could understand everything. He understood how the spider spins its web. He understood why how the birds are able to find their way back. In other words, even things that we don't understand now within science, migration patterns and things like that, he was able to understand. He also made the Sefer Refuos, which was a Sefer with all the different Refuos in it. That eventually was hidden by Chizkiyahu because people stopped davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Instead, they started just looking at the Sefer Refuos and doing that. It was hidden by Chizkiyahu, but Shlomo Melech wrote up a whole Sefer of Refuos. There came from all the nations, they wanted to hear the wisdom of Shlomo. From all the kings of the land, they heard about his wisdom, they came in. Either it was the king themselves or a representative. Hiram, the king of Tsur, he sent his servants over to Shlomo Melech because he heard that they had anointed him as king instead of his father. And Hiram was a good friend of David Melech all the days of his life. Now, Hiram was also a good friend of Yehuda. Hiram was over 1,200 years old by the time he died, according to the Medrash. He was also known as Hira HaAdulami. Hira HaAdulami in Parshas Vayeshev. He's there when Yehuda is there for the Zona. Remember, he sent a friend to go see where the Zona was, where Tamar was? That was Hira HaAdulami. That's him, and that was Hiram Melech Tzur. Shlomo sent to Hiram saying, you know David, my father. He wasn't able to build the base of Mekdash because the wars that were around him. Until God has put them underneath my feet, and now I'm all in peace. Now HaKadosh Baruch Hu has made it all peaceful around me. There's no suffering, no peg around, nothing bad is happening. Now I want to build the base of Mikdash Kasher. Divra Hashem al David Avi, like Hashem spoke to David my father, Lamor, saying, Bin Kasher, Atim Behatecha, Alkisecha, your son, that I put instead of you on your throne, who even have Baiz Lashmi, he will build the base of Mikdash in my name. And now you should command and cut down cedar woods from the Lebanon. My servants will be with your servants, and I will give you reward for your servants, Kikosher, Tomer, whatever you say, because there are nobody like the Sidonim when it comes to cutting the wood. So let's do this. Let's start this over here. The Sidonim were very, very good people. And he said that that's going to be, it's time for us to be able to do this, and it's time for us to go. Notice, by the way that he worded the Beis HaMikdash, he said, not a bias for Hashem. It's a bias l'shem Hashem. It's a bias for the sake of God, because he didn't want it to be just another house of worship, like idol worship or anything like that. He wanted to be a house that was known for the correct worship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what he wanted to do. Some say that Shlomo did not ask for any gifts or donations. He was specifically saying to Hiram, I will pay for all the wood. You don't have to worry about anything. You're not giving me anything for free or donations. I am willing to pay for absolutely anything. Others say he was willing to pay the wages, but not anything else. Let's stop with Pasuk Kafala for right now. Let's stop with that. It's too bad. I wanted to be able to finish good, but stop with that.